I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite pieces of media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
Dicynodonts were the most common herbivores in the early to mid-Triassic, outnumbering any dinosaurian ones by a vast number. In fact, there were no dinosaurian herbivores until the middle Jurassic. Almost all, until prosauropods came along, almost every single dinosaur living at that time, including the relatives of sauropods who are alive today, were carnivorous.
I did not know that. Yeah. And I'm suspecting many folks at home did not either. So,
in fact, Liz Wick. Oh, sorry. No, let's do the
So we're going to be answering your questions today. And if you have questions for this podcast or any of the podcasts that we do, be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can also specify what show it's for. And if you want to ask dinosaur questions, I'm fairly confident Matt would like that. If you don't do the email thing and you are happen to be a Patreon subscriber, you can go ahead and head over to our Discord server. We have a Patreon Q and podcast questions channel where we do look for all of our questions first as a way of saying thank you to our patrons for helping support us. And if you can't support us, we understand times are tough and all that. We do have a Q and podcast questions channel in the Discord server, again, to specify what show it's for so that we don't have to wrestle for it. All right. Now, these are some leftover questions from last week, or at least a couple of them are. And we're going to go ahead and start with them. So, with the assumption that Shadowlands won't be tossed into Chromie time and you'll have to level through it, do you think Blizzard should package Vanilla to BFA as the Old Gods era, and now that we're moving into the Cosmic era? While the Void is something of a threat we've welcomed, Void Elves with open arms, so now it feels like the story is moving away from the Void Lords as a threat, and now it's something bigger. I do think that there is something to show for... essentially, like, there is a bigger threat, but we don't know if it's the Void or not. Like, they haven't really mentioned anything about it. And I think there's definitely a case to be made that the Void is not quite done with us. We saw them in Shadowlands. There was an assault on Bastion there. There's definitely something looming. The Void is definitely tied up in everything. If we go with the description that we've talked about before, of there's possible that all these different realms were carved out specifically to be at, like, aspects of something larger, the Void is still part of that cycle, at least in some capacity. What do you think, Matt?
Well, to answer the first part of your question, from what I've been seeing looking around, we're going to go 10 to 60 in Chromie time in Dragonflight. And that doesn't include Shadowlands. That will be happening. As for the threats coming, what are they going to be? I mean, calling it cosmic would be weird because it's kind of already been cosmic, at least for several expansions.
Especially with the Titans and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, like I'm going to say right now that I don't know what else you'd call Legion. I mean, we go to another planet. We've you know, the demons invade from portals. You know, the Titans show up.
We fight on a spaceship. Don't forget that.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, we fight on a couple of spaceships, don't we?
We do. Yeah, a couple of them.
So, yeah, I think in general you would have to say that we've done Cosmic in previous Visions of WoW. This feels to me sometimes like there's something I notice in the community in general is this need to define things before they're done.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of human nature in that, I believe. I think we tend to want to feel a little more comfortable if we define something, right? Like we can package it up really neatly.
I don't think that World of Warcraft, as it has existed up to this point, breaks up into easy little chunks that are like every expansion before, I'm going to say every expansion before Legion for absolute sure does not feel like it is continuous with the following expansion. I mean, there are connective tissue, but it feels like books in a series. Like to use a series that I've actually, like I've read a few times and actually liked a bit. Although I am not a big fan of David Eddings, I liked his Elenium books, and you can totally break his books up in his Elenium books up into things like what you're talking about. But I don't feel like WoW does that. I feel like WoW is much more along the lines of, and again, this is before a certain point, but I feel like if you go from like vanilla WoW itself has multiple story arcs in mm-hmm. it. Like you could actually say that there's like three expansions inside vanilla WoW. There's the whole bit with the Molten Core and Blackwing Lair inside Blackrock Mountain. That feels like an arc. Then you have everything involving, you know, Zul'Gurub, and that's kind of connective tissue to get you to AQ, and the AQ stuff is its own thing. And then you have Naxxramas. And these feel like they feel separate. They are obviously part of the same world, but they feel very much like, for lack of a word, seasons of a TV show. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it does, actually.
So if you look at that, so that's original WoW almost feels like a couple seasons of a TV show, like two or three. And then, for lack of a better word, the show stops. Like it maybe the show comes off the air or whatever. And then it comes back as something else, the way Battlestar Galactica did. And I'm not talking from the original 70s, 80s Battlestar Galactica to the sci-fi version. But I mean, Battlestar Galactica kept having new series and new movies and new things. And they were connected because it's still Battlestar Galactica, but it was separated by theme and tone. And I think that this is an example. Like if you go from Burning Crusade is very focused on Draenor and Illidan and the weird otherworldly stuff. And then you go to Wrath of Lich King, which is not.
Mm-hmm.
They are. It's a tone shift. It's a thematic shift. It's almost like American Horror Story. I think that's actually a really good way to look at it. Is American Horror Story, it's always the same actors, but it's like different stories.
Yeah, it's like almost like carving out pieces of an anthology that's long running, right? Like it's
or like Doctor Who.
Yeah,
where like you get the Doctor as a different person, but at the same time, it's still the Doctor. The
same character, right?
Yeah, and the things come back and things reoccur, but they're noticeably different between like seasons or whatever they call them. Series, I think they call them.
Series, yeah, they call them series. Yeah.
And I think that that's something to be considered in the case of WoW, because MMOs are long form storytelling by their nature.
They're
absolutely. They're planned out in advance, but there's also a bit of improvisation to them in that you get what, you know, they're like, okay, we're going to plan this out ahead. But if like literally everybody decided, like if the tumult of the audience is clearly that they want to see X will get put in, even if it wasn't part of the original plan. Like the Dragon Isles that we're going to see in Dragon Flight were originally planned for Vanilla WoW.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean the expansion we're getting is what we would have got in Vanilla WoW.
Right, because things shift and things change, right? Like it's constantly evolving and constantly changing.
So I think trying to set up, like, say, this is all the Cosmic era and this is now the something era. No, I don't think that works yet. It may someday, but I feel like going forward, like if you look at, you got BC, Wrath, and Cataclysm. Cataclysm feels like a really hard stop point.
It does, because like, everything changes. Yeah.
Yeah, but would you call that the Cosmic era? Would you call the thing before it the Cosmic era? It doesn't feel right either way. like Cataclysm feels like it is the, you know, everything is different now era, for lack of a better word. It's the change era. Cataclysm is a good name for it because it is a cataclysm. And if you look at every expansion after Cataclysm, if you look at Mists of Pandaria, it's all about how cycles of tumult and chaos and war are kept alive by hate.
Mm-hmm.
Like people aren't, you know, it's yes, they did this thing to us, but we have to let it go or we're just going to keep fighting this forever. And that's not always satisfying and it's not always possible. And the counterpoint of that is if you don't decisively deal with something, then what happens later? You go through Warlords of Draenor and Legion, which are very much combined. Those two expansions are a piece. If you like one, you have to recognize that the other was necessary for it.
Well, and even in the storyline, like if you go through like specifically the story of it, one was trying to prevent the other and failed, right? Like that was the original conception of it.
Yeah, Warlords of Draenor is very much, it's a fascinating study in failed intentions. And Legion is very much about the, what will you do to survive? What is too much? Where's the line? What will you do to keep your people alive? So there's a thematic tie between those two. Battle for Azeroth hasn't got that tie. But it's certainly in reaction to Legion. It's like, okay, Legion happened, and now the world is in the shape it is because of the events of Legion. What happens now? Where do we go from here? And it clearly sets up Shadowlands, but thematically it is not very connected to Shadowlands. Shadowlands feels entirely different. Shadowlands combines the weird alienness of the Burning Crusade with the weird, you know, death focus of Wrath. And we can go back and forth on how well you think it did, but mm-hmm. It's definitely distinctive and unique in its own thing. So I feel like right now, trying to lump all of that together into an era is not going to work. It just isn't accurate to describe the way the story flowed, in my opinion.
I would tend to agree with that. It's because it's been such a long-running thing, it's existed for so long, it makes it even harder to sort of part it out. Like when we were talking about, you were going through the expansions individually, that made a lot of sense because before, you know, there were a million expansions, we would, as players and even as developers, they would refer to things as like the vanilla era or the Burning Crusade era or the Wrath era, the Cataclysm era. But it's gotten so long in the tooth now. This is not a bad thing. I don't mean to make it sound like it's a bad thing that it's been long running. But the fact that there's so much to it makes that harder. Now, you can still define it by the expansions because things tend to shift rather dramatically between expansions. But even if you notice... go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. That's just me saying, yes, I agree. So
yeah. But then if you look at some of the other ways that they've defined it, even as the folks working on it, they've also started to define it as war eras, right? Like this is the Third War. This is the Fourth War. This is the Legion War. This is, you know, Shifting Sands. Like they do that because these are huge hallmark events or pieces that happen. Right. So there's ways to do it that I think feel genuine to it. However, I think it is a very, very difficult thing to do. I understand the desire to do so. Believe me, I do. but at this point,
another way to put it is if any form of long form storytelling with any form of it,
mm-hmm.
Some of it is planned and some of it is accidental because you never know what part of something is going to like click in with the players. We did not know back in vanilla that Sorfang would be the major focus of an expansion.
Yeah, we had no idea.
He was barely a character. He was a few catchphrases and he was really cool. It was really cool to mind control him and just utterly wreck Orgrimmar with him.
Or, like, you know, we didn't really get anything of depth from him until Icecrown, right?
Yeah, exactly. But he was cool and we all liked him. I mean, even Alliance players liked him. Even when we like lost the mind control on him and he'd come out and he would ruin us. Like it was just, you know, but we liked it. But at the same time, there are other characters who are like that. I don't know if anyone's ever noticed this. We did a leveling stream for the Blizzard Watch crew did a leveling stream and we were doing Death Knights. And this led to the hilarious Corfax is just won't stop killing us moment, where Corfax just runs loose well after we've kicked over the point where the Lich King has been sent away and Tyrion and Darion have their little, we will defeat him. But meanwhile, in the background, Corfax is running around murdering us. And it's hilarious and it's great, but Corfax didn't get an expansion.
Mm-hmm.
These are not things that you can predict. You cannot predict which guy is going to become absolutely super relevant, even though he's essentially a throwaway character.
Let's look at Zakan, right?
Yeah, Zappy Boy.
Yeah, Zappy Boy, like, instantaneously a fan favorite, but that I don't think was expected. I think they even said as much, right? Like,
he's just a character they had. Like, the cinematic where he comes and talks to Sorfang was made significantly after the mm-hmm. cinematic we first see him in, and they realized, oh, wait a minute, people love this guy.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do something with that. Then he gets his own cinematic. Then he gets to be in the book because people love him. But that doesn't always happen. But because it's long-form storytelling, there's so many characters. Do you remember the Thistley Crow Thirst?
Yeah, actually, I do. Yeah.
Everybody, like, for like a 2-year period, everybody was like super hot for Thistley Crow. I didn't understand it because I somehow missed her. I don't think I did Hyjal that much.
Well, her quest was a little out of the way too. The Thistley Crow stuff, like, you could skip it. Like, you didn't have to do it, but please continue.
Yeah, but that's just my point. It's like that character caught on. I don't think they would, if they had known that was going to happen, they wouldn't have put her on a throwaway quest that you didn't have to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because that's, you know, why would they do that? So yeah, it's in this kind of storytelling, in this kind of format, not just how we look at it, but how it will be defined in the future is malleable. It will change as time goes on. Before Legion came out, the absolute undisputed favorite expansion for, I'd say, a good solid 70% of the player base was Wrath of the Lich King. And yeah, it's still a beloved expansion by many people. I find it to be, you know, not my beloved. I have lots of problems with it, which I'll explain sometime when we're not on a lore podcast. But I do think that Legion changed the way everyone thinks about other expansions. It changed the way you think about Legion. Made people like Legion, of course, but it also made people like Missa Pandaria more. Like, I have lost track of the amount of people who would suddenly be like, wow, Missa Pandaria is really good. How come I didn't notice that? And I'm like, because you were too busy hating it. And now you realize it was good because it's very similar to the expansion you're in now that is good. That's just something that can happen. And it changes the way your perspective on everything that has come before now is. And because of that, I feel like in the future, we may refer to this all as something we don't even think about now, because some expansion might come out that changes. It contextualizes everything before it in a different way. I don't know what that expansion will be or what it would be about, but I'm saying it could happen.
So hopefully that answers a little bit of that question, but we have one more from the same person. These are all from Tolkienberg. The next one is, do you think of an expansion where we don't add new zones as the expansion goes? Each patch is just adding to the original and advancing the story there. I think this would prevent the world from feeling empty in later patches. Thoughts? They've done this a little bit, right? Like, mm-hmm. For lack of a better term, I mean, Cataclysm did add a couple of new zones, but for all that it did, it was the largest overhaul the game had ever seen by completely changing the face of the game world itself. They also added new content that happened to be in the world, in these areas, in these zones that players could go to as the expansion moved on. They did the same thing with Mists of Pandaria, where there was more stuff added to the zones. But I think what you're asking for is something a little bit larger scale, where it's like, and maybe I'm wrong, and I'm going to throw I think it's the idea of, and its core concept is, let's say we have a single zone. It's one zone, Horde on one side, Alliance on the other, whatever. But that one zone is so massive that every content update just adds something more to that specific zone. City of Heroes did this. There's other MMOs that have done this in the past. And it's interesting. The problem that you're going to run into is justifying it in the storytelling, at least from my perspective. Because how are these new things being discovered in something that players have tread through for 3, 4, 5 months or whatever the case is between updates? How do you tie that in with the lore of that area? How do you tie it into the storytelling of that area? Not saying
I'm glad you asked,
which is why I'm going to pass this over to Matt.
The perfect example of what you're talking. First off, I don't know that this person is asking if they don't add any more new zones in the expansion. It could be that they're asking, why don't they just not add more new zones after the expansion goes live?
No, literally, do you think of an expansion where we don't add new zones
as the expansion goes?
So the initial setup, right? The zones are there at the beginning.
Yeah. And the thing is they did that in Cataclysm. Mm-hmm. And the way it worked, the perfect example of it is the Molten Front, where how do we discover these new things that we didn't discover before? They start happening. So they're not there the first time through. It's that now they are. Now that we've opened up this new this new thing has happened on this old area. That is something that they did in Cataclysm with the Burning Front. That's something that they did in Shadowlands with the Veil of Eternal Blossom / Veil of Eternal Sorrow, where you change the zone and make the new stuff be part of that change. That's one way you can do it. And it certainly can work. Another thing, however, let's take your idea and really go with it. What if you don't have any new zones? Like, what, not even one new zone. You start the expansion, and that expansion is set just on Azeroth, and there's nothing new. No new zones open up. No new places to go. There's no going to another dimension to go to the rock place or the air place or the fire place. I mean, we never did get to go to the Abyssal Maw. So.
I know, that's sad.
But let's just say, okay, we'll start there. Nothing new. How do you do it? And the thing I said is one way you can do that. You can have, okay, sure, no new zones are added, but now the Horde has built a new fortress in Arathi and is making a push to reclaim it. And they've disturbed they've disturbed the Gopher people. And now both Horde and Alliance have to deal with the Gopher people. If you've seen Caddyshack, you know that can be really hard to do.
Or the end of Incredibles 1.
Yeah. So you've got, that's one possibility. You make something new happen in the zone. Another possibility is actually to do something that we've never seen in World of Warcraft very much. Interzone connection. We've seen it to a degree, but one quest that always comes to mind. Do you remember back in Wrath of the Lich King, there was a portal from Sholazar Basin to Un'Goro?
Yes.
And a quest where you went to Un'Goro and brought this giant golem-y thing.
It was the Titan portal. Yeah.
Yeah. Imagine if you go to the next patch, I don't know, 11.2, and now suddenly you're traveling from, say, Silithus to Vashir, because there's now a threat that's actually coming from Silithus and going to Vashir looking for Nazoth relics or whatever, because C'Thun is back and he's trying to make a power grab. Now, you have to add new stuff, but it's not stuff that you would have just discovered because you'd been there before, because you would have no reason to go from Silithus to Vashir before. And now you do. You're taking portals to go from Silithus to Vashir. You're going from the desert to the underwater place. So you can make changes to the zones that serve that need. And they did this back in the day too. Like, original Silithus had a glow up. I don't know if you guys remember it. There was like the Twilight Invasions inside mm-hmm. Silithus.
Yep.
And that was during the whole War of the Shifting Sands thing. And that also was a situation where you had to go between zones because of a threat. Because of what was going on in Silithus, you had to go through Un'Goro and into the Caverns of Time to get the Bronze Dragons to help you. And that's that kind of thing you can do. You can really play with the interconnection. Even if you do have, like, say, the one big new zone that Joe's talking about, you can really play with the interconnections. If you design the zone where it's got places for these interconnections to lead. Of all places, I think Warlords actually did this pretty well. Frostfire in particular, there's a lot of stuff in Frostfire that you didn't even know you needed to deal with at first. And I honestly feel like Frostfire is an example of an expansion, a zone that could have been even better than it was. I'm not sure what happened in Frostfire, quite frankly. I feel like as much as the presumption with me is that I'm an Alliance guy first and foremost, I have to say that I felt like the story for the Horde in Frostfire got truncated.
It ended, and then everything else was moving on with the Iron Horde. So yeah. That's one of those things where I expected it to be a bigger hub or a bigger piece for the story than it was.
Yeah, like that whole building, the whole building of a city inside the giant thing.
Taking over the ogre encampment, like that.
There's ways that this can be done where you don't necessarily add a bunch of new zones. Keep in mind that a lot of the expansions didn't have new zones after the zones that they introduced.
Burning Crusade didn't.
Yeah, Wrath of the Lich King didn't. I mean, it gave you a bunch of zones, and that was it.
Yeah, and then added more stuff as things went on.
Yeah, but it was added two zones that were already there.
Right.
In fact, what's really funny is that originally the plan was to put the Argent Tournament stuff in Crystal Song, but they couldn't because at the time the limitations of the engine were such that with Dalaran floating above, the entire zone had to basically be empty, or you couldn't do Dalaran. Like, the computers were just saying, no. I don't know if you guys remember this, and I'm sure Joe will, but when you zoned into Dalaran back in Wrath, you couldn't move for like 20 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that affected their storytelling because they couldn't do the big, expansive thing they wanted to do in Crystal Song. If you look at the original quests that set up what the Argent Tournament was going to become, they're in Crystal Song. You run around down in Crystal Song killing satyrs and stuff. And yet that never comes to anything because they couldn't put it there. They tried, and the computers were like, no, we're not going to run this. This is too much. So they had to put it up in Ice Crown. And I don't know. I don't remember who said this. I think it might have been Anne, because I was raiding with Anne during the time that Trial of the Crusader was a big deal. And I remember her saying, yeah, just put it. Like, put it on Ice Crown. That's a great idea. I'm sure there's no way the Lich King would notice that. It's like, you might as well have built it in front of Ice Crown Citadel. I mean, really get the Scourge coming over to say hello. So yeah, it is one of those situations where you can do this kind of thing. I just don't know. I feel like nowadays, so quite frankly, some of the best stuff in every expansion is the thing they add later. Like, Argus is the best thing they added in Legion. And Legion was already pretty freaking good.
I would argue that there's a certain amount of momentum, right? Like, it's one of those things where when you start something new, and I think they've talked about this a little bit in the past, where like, until something's in the wild, you kind of don't know how it's going to be. And you can tend to think of these releases as almost like living entities, right? You can prepare it, you can do whatever you need to before it goes out in the wild, but it really doesn't have like a sense of itself necessarily until it's had a chance to breathe and sort of do its thing. So like with expansions, you can do the betas, you can do the alphas, you can do the testing, you can do all the release for it, but the expansion really doesn't feel its best until it's had a little bit of a chance to figure out what it wants to be. Like, you saw that in Shadowlands too, right? Like, each release in Shadowlands, and don't get me wrong, I loved Shadowlands from the start. Like, I want to make sure that that's perfectly clear to those listening at home. But as the expansion went on, I thought it got better, whether it was accessibility or whether it was the zones that were introduced and the story elements that were in there. It felt like it figured out what it wanted to do and where it wanted to go and just kind of went with it.
Yeah, it established a groove.
Exactly. It's that's sort of like, it. Yes.
If you're doing a jam. Say you're like jamming with somebody and, you know, you're playing bass and they're playing guitar and then you've got a drummer and each of you is just fiddling around at first. Once the groove comes in, once somebody sits down and just lays out like for lack of a better word, a lattice for the other two to build on, that's when you get things coming together. That's why it's called coming together. I think that in the case of Shadowlands, the initial launch was fine. I thought there was quite a bit of it that I thought was pretty good. But it was really the stuff that they did after with Corthia. And then I think Xerath Mortis is the best thing they've done
in a long time.
Yeah. And Corthia sets up a really nice groove because Corthia takes everything you've heard before and recontextualizes it. It's like taking the Amen break out of the original song. And now you use it in sampling. Now you use it in a different way. And that set up Xerath Mortis. And once you get to Xerath Mortis, now the expansion feels complete. And that works really well. It worked in Legion with Argus. I mean, I think that Legion had Suramar, which did a lot of work on this regard as well. I think Suramar is one of the better. Even though Suramar existed from launch, it's an expansion thing that got bigger and more expansive as the expansion went, and it served as a ramp to get you to the next stage. Battle for Azeroth, I have my problems with it, but I think that the Nazjatar is astonishing. Nazjatar is really well done. I don't like Nomragon. Not Nomragon, sorry. Not Gadgetzan. I want to call it Gadgetzan. Jeez. Mechagon. You know what I'm talking about. Mechagon.
Yep.
I don't like it as much because of the way it's set up, but if you are into that kind of utterly open world, just go do what you want thing, it's brilliant. Mechagon is extremely well done. I feel like Battle for Azeroth would be the worse off without them.
And I would agree. And I think that Battle for Azeroth is a perfect example of adding new things as an expansion goes that do nothing but improve the quality of it. So like, I think they've also sort of hit their stride with it where they know like what to do. And I think we're going to see that moving into Dragonflight too. Right. And we're going to see maybe, I don't think we're going to get a new zone added. Maybe we will as the thing goes on, as we uncover something, or maybe it's something that will get hinted at early on in the story that we, you know, we can't get to. Go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, this is also something that they've done going all the way back to Burning Crusade.
Yeah.
Because the Isle of Quel Danas was literally added after the end of Black Temple.
Yeah.
And it's great. And it even does that thing where I talked about going between zones. Mm-hmm. Because on the Isle of Quel Danas, you go through a portal and suddenly you're back in the freaking, you know, what is that first zone? My God. Why can I? I want to say Tanan, but it's not Tanan anymore. What is the opening zone of Burning Crusade? Oh my God! Hellfire Peninsula. Yes, thank you. Oh my God, that was so hard. But yeah, you go back to Hellfire, and then you come back to the Isle. It shows how the Legion's operating. It shows like what's going on, and it does a really good job of that. So yeah, I think Joe's absolutely on the money here.
And. Like I said, I think there's already, and these are maybe a little bit of mild spoilers, and I apologize, and I'm not going to go into like details, but as you're going through some of the opening areas in for like the Drakthir, there's very clearly more to what's going on than what you have access to and what you can see at that moment. It definitely opens the door to revisit some of that later on, which is not adding anything like a new zone, but it is doing something with a zone that you already know exists. So it's an interesting thing, and I'm very curious to see how they're going to do that.
Yeah, and I will say this too, to go back to another expansion that we've been talking about, Wrath of the Lich King, Ice Crown Citadel, as it is at the end of that game, is completely different than Ice Crown Citadel when you first go to it. It is essentially a new zone. So keep in mind that there are ways they can do it without actually putting anything on the map. Because they didn't put a new zone on the map. They just expanded out. There was so much in Ice Crown that it didn't really do much or only featured in a couple of quests. And then suddenly, okay, now it's this big deal. Now there's a giant tournament up there. Now there's this, you know, whole area where we're fighting the Scourge. So yeah, there's ways to do it without actually adding a new zone, but adding a new zone is often one of the best ways to do it.
And there's one more question I want to move on to because I want to keep things going on here. This is the last one from Tolkienberg. Any theory on what the Pantheon of Death truly are? Are they to Death what the Titans are to Order? Will Ilune turn out to not be Anaru and actually the Winter Queen equivalent of life? Is Anar basically the Ilune Winter Queen of Order? We don't know. I know that's an answer that everybody hates when we say that, but it's ripe with potential.
Yeah, it's true. We were saying it because we don't know. I mean, what do you want?
But it's one of those things where they've left little tidbits that they could pull on later, but nothing really strongly pulls one way or another. Only thing we know is that, at least as far as the Pantheon of Death and the Titans go, that there is a relationship. Because we know that between the Titans and Ilune, there is a relationship. So there's sort of this connection, even just going through Ilune, that all three of these bodies, these groups of entities are tied together in some capacity. What that is and what that means, we have no bloody idea.
We know that the soul of a Titan ordinarily can't enter the Shadowlands, or doesn't enter. We know that one did get brought to the Shadowlands, as part of the Zoval's plan in the first place, the jailer's plan, because we saw Argus attempt to take over the role of Arbiter.
Yep. And
we also saw that the role of Arbiter can be passed on to somebody who's like not, who's just born on in the world and died there and came to the Shadowlands. So it feels like these the beings that are the Pantheon of Death are capable of being replaced, and it's like a title more than it is a person.
It's a mantle, yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing like about all that relationship too is it also feels like to go back to your point, what we know is that they're all sort of like supposed to be relegated to one reality, essentially. Right, like the Pantheon of Death should not be coming to the realm of life. The Titans are not supposed to go to the Shadowlands, and we know that there's been a precedent for it. Now, originally, we thought that Sargeras captured the souls, and I think I made this posit at one point, and I think this might have been just kind of the assumed thing for a lot of people that Sargeras captured the souls of the Titans when he slew them. But we find Aenar and Elenara, right? We find a Titan soul that he didn't capture, but it's not in the Shadowlands. So that we know that there's some form of mechanism that keeps them there. When it comes to the whole Pantheon of Death, the Arbiter, even when it's destroyed, quote unquote, it's still there. It doesn't go anywhere else until somebody else picks up that mantle. Somebody else is infused with it. That power is given to something else. And when we usurp the jailer, finally, we take that mantle and give it to Pelagos, right? We give it to somebody else. Where
don't we technically give it to Pelagos before
time,
we deal with the jailer?
Timeline wise, it's a little weird. I think we do, but. Don't I don't know. The timing's weird because how the campaign released to where the raid released, but regardless, we essentially usurp the jailer, take their essence away from the vessel that they're in, and somebody else takes over that role of the Arbiter, right? So we don't know what it means for the larger cosmic order. Like Anne wrote a thing many years ago about Aluna's Inaru. Well, we joked about it. We laughed about it. There might be a tie there. There might be a deeper connection there than we mean or than we thought. We don't know. Like, these are all threads that they can pull on later. And I'm going to shut up and let Matt talk for a little while.
Well, I mean, we do know that the Tear of a Loon, the item that was used as one of the pillars of creation.
And now is created with the souls of all those that have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We know that that was used to essentially restart the core of Inaru Prime.
Mm-hmm.
And that does imply, usually it would have to be one of their direct descendants. And in this case, it could be like one of their ancestors. We don't know how the Inaru came to be in the first place. So I think in general, the thing to think about is we don't know a lot of things, and necessarily learning stuff about them does not actually answer the questions.
It just opens up more questions, really.
Yeah, it's like an episode of Futurama where someone lit a fire underwater with a scar. Like, you know, that just raises further questions. Like, seriously, we don't know if... Here's one thing to think about. We know that the Pantheon of Death seems to be one of the mechanisms that the first ones put into place to make the Shadowlands run the way they wanted them to.
We think that the Titans are much of the same way for the realm of reality, right?
Yeah, maybe. But that's the thing is, like, we don't know what the first ones were intending. We don't know what the Shadowlands' purpose is in the great web of creation. Like, if all of these higher realms or lower realms or whatever you want to call them, if they all exist as part of a matrix to make reality, like Shadow, you know. Xerath Mortis in Shadowlands has to connect back to actually the world that we came from in order for it to do its function. And we don't know what its function is exactly, but we know it's part of the first one's design. What did they design reality to do? What is it for? Why is it there?
And
you know, where did they come from, since the thing that they created is everything? Like, did they exist before there was an everything? Where did they come from? Did they predate the light and the void? are they the art? Like, did they make the light and the void and all those other forces like fell and death and life, like, and order? Do these come from the first ones? Did the first ones like bring them into existence? Did they exist before that? And the first ones are simply using them as building blocks to create a reality that's more contextual, that's more complicated, that's more, you know, fit for purpose. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to any of it, but I do see threads.
Like,
I think those threads are directly there.
Like, we made the case, I think, last week or the week before, where, you know, what is Azeroth, right? I think it was last week where we answered the question of, like, what is Azeroth supposed to be? Mm-hmm. Is Azeroth being tended to specifically, you know, what was the whole goal of the first ones to create the perfect entity? And was that supposed to be Azeroth? We don't know, but there is things that could point to that, right? There are things that lead you down that path.
There's things that will make you think about it. Absolutely. And also think about this. Xerath Mortis has a direct connection to Azeroth and those engines that we find in Ice Crown.
Yep.
Those engines look Titan, and we've seen Titan construction on Azeroth before.
Right? We've seen Titan construction in other realms of existence now.
Yeah, but here's my question. Why does Xerath Mortis go to Azeroth?
Mm-hmm.
And if there are other versions of that, if there's a Xerath Ordis for order or what have you, do they channel to Azeroth?
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about that as well. Like, is there a Xerath Arcanus? Is there a Xerath, like, you know, Ordo?
Vitae.
Xerath Vitae, Xerath Litae, or whatever. Like, there's tons of things that could possibly... Well, this is a funnel system. We could do a whole show about this, folks. Yeah. Trust me.
But if they exist and if they channel to Azeroth, does that mean Azeroth actually existed first? Like, is Azeroth actually the oldest thing in our cosmos? Is it the linchpin? Like, there's a concept in occultism called the center. It's like the central mountain or the omphalos. It's the place from which everything flows. In Greece, in mythic times, Mount Olympus was the omphalos. It was the place from which, that's where it starts. Everything comes from there. Is that what Azeroth is to its cosmos? It could be, because there's a ton of stuff happening on this planet that's out in the middle of nowhere that nobody knows anything about.
There's also somebody that posited, and I thought this was an interesting one, that everything else exists because of Azeroth, not the other way around, that Azeroth is literally the sleeping, dreaming child that has dreamed the everything into existence, which I could see a case for that too. Like, that's the beauty of
dream,
this, right?
And the Emerald Dream is once said to be the dreams of Azeroth.
Yep.
And what if the Shadowlands is a dream of Azeroth? Like, it's the dream about the scary thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what happens if I die? I dream about that. What, you know, what about magic and ponies and fancy stuff? I dream about that. What about bad stuff and corruption and evil? And there's a place for that. That could be another possibility. There's a lot of different ways to look at it, and we don't know the specific answers. We can say that there does appear to be an interrelation, and I don't think... To tie back to something you asked in your first question, you know, we're welcoming the Void Elves. We're not welcoming the Void Elves because they're Void Elves. We're accepting that they're void, that the void in them is usable, because we've got our own priests who use the void.
And have for years.
Yeah. And so it's the thing is that I think it's always been the case with any of these forces, even demons and the fell, is that there's moral standards are from the perspective of the beings having them. To a Azerothian, the demons of the burning, you know, of the twisting nether are horrible. They destroy us. They ruin our things. We hate them. They don't see things that way. They feel like they're doing a good thing. They're bringing chaos forth. They're stimulating change. Change is good, but unfettered, limitless change, we can't survive it. So mm-hmm. to us, it's bad. The demons are not us, and they don't care about our perspective. So all of this is a very roundabout way of saying that not only do we not know, but we don't even know what we're looking at and what we're thinking about is the right way to be thinking about it. Because at any moment, we could find out something new. But that would be the thing I most want to put out there, is that we may discover that there is, in fact, the thing that people have been postulating, that there's a mysterious seventh force that is essentially not a force at all, but the antithesis of all
the great devourer, the destroyer, whatever you want
to call it. The thing that wants everything not to be here in the first place. Because, mm-hmm. you know, like void, even void, the way void's been portrayed, void is an absence of light, but it's not an absence of itself. Obviously, there's something there in the void. And the other thing wants there to be nothing, including the void. So who knows? We don't know. There's been some hints dropped. We'll see where it goes from here.
And I'm also interested to see if those hints and threads will continue on in the next expansion. Like, even though we're going to be dealing with the dragons have always been tied up with the Titans, right? There's always been that association since the empowerment of the Dragonflights, since they were first available and fought, you know, against Galakrond. Since all of that happened, they've always been tied up with it. They're intrinsically tied to Azeroth in their charge of keeping the planet safe. You know, there's a lot of deep connections and ties there. And I think that through unraveling the history of the dragons, because don't forget, they haven't been to the Dragon Isles in, 10,000 years?
Yeah, a little bit before the Sundering.
They haven't been there for that long. They're not exactly forthcoming with telling us about their past because, well, let's be honest, we kind of mess up everything that the dragons do. Sometimes we do good, but I mean, you know, the whole Blue Dragon Flight saw mortals wielding magic and was like, wow, they're doing some really messed up stuff. We're going to go ahead and take that away from them. Or, you know, traveling through time, mortals helped cause the whole Warlords of Draenor thing. Like, there's a lot of reasons for the dragons to not really care about mortals, and there are reasons for them to care about mortals, but they don't actually have to tell us their entire life story. But now we're going back to their homeland. We're going back to the place that they called home for so long after they were empowered by the Titans, where Tyr, we think, made shop. We don't know yet. We know what they've told us, but I'm going to not say anything until we actually see it in live release, but you know, so Tyr definitely had a presence there.
There's something else to point out too. For the first time, we're actually getting to see the perspective of the proto-drakes of the time,
mm-hmm.
who had to witness their elemental-based, very primal, very, you know, very much of a young society. Suddenly these beings from elsewhere scoop in and elevate some of their people, or at least according to them, they're elevating them and transform them into this wholly new thing. And you see several times just in the stuff in Dragonflight, like the leveling stuff, there's a whole storyline about, you know, dragons before proto dragons are elemental beings.
Yes.
They're beings of element.
We find that out in Wrath, right?
Yeah. But we don't, we know it's true in Wrath, but now they're actually dealing with what does that mean? What the Titans did, or the Titan Forge did, what Tyr did, is fundamentally change the nature of these beings. And there were quite a few proto-drakes who were like, this is an abomination. You're not us anymore. And this is not new to Azeroth. I mean, we've seen in Azeroth several times this has happened. The Jinyu, who are basically uplifted Gorloks.
Murlocs.
Well, that's the thing. Gorloks are Murlocs who've been exposed to something like the Well of Eternity in Sholazar. And the Jinyu are like that, taken all the way.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that I specified for maybe folks that missed that expansion or didn't know.
Yeah, Gorloks are kind of Murloc. Yeah,
yeah.
He is totally right. But another one we've actually seen is trolls.
Yeah.
Not only that the trolls themselves are elevated from what their ancestors were, you still see some signs of the original trolls that became the trolls we have today. Those giant troll berserkers are essentially a throwback.
Mm-hmm.
That's what trolls were before they began to effectively come up and become a people. And the Zandalar, you look at the Zandalar and you can see there's like the Zandalar are extremely advanced.
And they're taller than the other trolls, yeah.
And
right?
And they stand up straight.
Mm-hmm.
There's no hunching, none of that. But then you look at like So you've got the trolls, they change and grow according to like outside forces. It's very clear that that Xandalar Isle is built on Titan ruins.
Yeah, and we know that for a fact, right? Like we know that there was at least three Titan facilities there.
Yeah, the one up in Uldir. Mm-hmm. But the city of Jindalore is a Titan facility.
Yep.
It's complete with the big Titan lock on the top. Mm-hmm. And then there's the one out in Voldoon that's even bigger and more and more elaborate. So yeah, that's a fact. So we know that the trolls of the Xandalar trolls and all the trolls who left Xandalar to go spread out into the world, like the Gurubashi or the Amani or the Frost trolls whose name I can never remember. Drakari? Yeah, the Drakari.
Drakari.
All these various troll groups, the Faraki from Zul'Farak, they all left Xandalar after these places were built because, for instance, one of the Amani ones is in Voldoon.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to the original home of the Amani trolls. It's right there in Voldoon. It's still there. I believe that a giant tentacle-faced monster smashes open a Titan lock at one point there.
That is correct.
So that's enough right there. We know trolls have been elevated by the Titans. The Titans did something to the trolls and made them more like this for whatever purpose. We even see a troll in Ulduar, a big troll statue.
Yeah, we do actually.
Yeah. The Tauren, who we think of as being as close to purely native to Azeroth as it gets, are descended from the, not the Tonka, the other guys, the Yongol. And the Yongol that we have now are descended from a previous group of Yongol that the Mogu transformed, and the Mogu are Titan forged.
And there was statues of them in Ulduar as well.
There's statues of them in Ulduar as well. The elves, all elves exist because of the Well of Eternity, which was part of the, it's literally the blood of Azeroth spilling forth into a body of water. But at the time there was an entire Titan facility built around it. And the tomb of Sargeras, which originally the Temple of Ilune, was part of that facility. It was the control hub of that facility. It's where the Pillars of Creation are originally used. And it's where a bunch of trolls became Night Elves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's essentially, that's very much like the Jinyu to the Gorloks. If you think of the trolls as Gorloks, as the uplifted version of trolls, the Jinyu are, you know, the uplifted version of those guys, and so are the Night Elves. And then you see that elves keep changing. Elves go from Night Elves to Nightborn if you do this, you know, High Elves if you do this.
Void Elves if you do this. They're highly susceptible to environmental conditioning, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Like the Proto-Drakes.
Like the Proto-Drakes.
Like the trolls.
Like,
because look at trolls. Frost trolls, desert trolls, forest trolls.
And which also goes in part and parcel with going back to the Titan Forge, right? The Titan Forge, let's just talk about like the proto dwarves. Let's talk about the Earthen. There are several different versions of them, right? There are frost Earthen, there are regular Earthen, there's a smattering of elemental versions of them that were created. Why were they created like that? Or were they not created like that? Were they created as a base model that then adapted to the environment that they were in? Because that's the way that Titan tinkering works. And we've seen that echoed in Shadowlands, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen how Anima transforms, how entities that are comprised of anima adhere to the realm and environment that they're in. I just want to tie this all together here real quick, because I think you got me thinking a little bit about this, and it's fascinating, because like we talk about how transformative anima was. We've had several episodes of this, we've had several discussions about it, and you look back and like, yes, of course, like look at Bastion. The folks that go there, the ones that are aspirants, they're molded to the form of Bastion. When they're elevated, they're molded to the form of the environment. When you go to Maldraxxus, it's the same thing.
Yeah, you can retain your original appearance if you really want to.
But even then, you're not really, because your original appearance still takes on the pallor or the touch of the environment you're in the same way what you're talking about with like the trolls and everything else, right?
But what I'm talking about is that if in Meldraxxus there are people who are like, you know, there's Mograine who still looks like Mograine. Yes, he's different, but he looks like Mograine. Mm-hmm. Then there's Lady Vash who showed up as an elf
and then decided to become a bone naga.
Yeah, she's like, no, I don't, I am not an elf anymore. And then you've got like Draka, who, you know, if Draka's different, it's not by much. Mm-hmm. But then you have like Baron Vizaz or whatever his name was. That dude, that's not what he looked like when he died. And they do this with like, when you go to Ardenweald, you literally can't maintain your original form. Like you have to pick a new one. And you go to,
unless
like,
you're Ysera.
Yeah. But if you go to like, you know, if you go to Revendreth, like you can retain it, but it requires a lot of resistance. And if you let them take away your sins, if you let them take away your pride, you'll eventually change into something more like Denathrius. Mm-hmm. You become closer and closer. What are they called? The blood people. Oh my God.
Venthyr.
Thank you. The Venthyr become more and more like Denathrius the longer it goes. And now let's turn to something that relates to what Joe's been talking about. When the Mogu began shaping creatures around Pandaria to their whim, one of them was the Yongol, that they took the original proto Yongol and turned them into what the Yongol look like today, and that's what led to the Torn and the Tonka.
The Pandaren. Which we think were Firbolg.
Or some relation. Yeah. And then there's the one that I really want to focus on for a second are the lizard ones.
Sauroch.
The Sauroch, yeah. The Sauroch are changed via something that the Mogu call anima.
Yep.
Now, is it the same anima? No, it's clearly not. It's clearly much inferior in terms of its power and potency, but it exists in our reality.
Or it's an attempt to recreate it in our reality by using the materials that are available to us.
Exactly. It's one other way to think of it might be that anima into Shadowlands is conceptual in a way that it won't be in our reality. Nothing in our reality
because it doesn't have to adhere to a certain strict rule structure, whereas our reality kind of does.
Exactly. Or at least not the same rule structure.
Right.
So, but they called it anima and they used it to change things. It's the means by which they created the new Yongol, which led to the existence of the Torin. And there's an old Torin myth about there's a dark force that went across the face of the world and changed the Torin and made them cruel and vicious. And only some Torin escaped it and returned to the Earth Mother. The Yongol are not good people. The Yongol are the kind of people who discover something and immediately try to use it to hurt other people. And the Tonka aren't nearly as vicious, but the Tonka still don't ask permission from the spirits. There's no attempt to negotiate.
They're benders, right? Like they force them
into their bidding. They're not as bad as others we've seen because they only do it when they absolutely have to. They only ask for enough to live because Northrend is so hostile. But they don't take no for an answer. If the spirit doesn't want to do it, they don't say, okay, what can I give you that'll make you want to do it? What do you want? What do you need? Let's make a deal. Ironically, goblins are great shaman for that very reason. Because goblins understand, oh no, okay, I get it. You won't give me that. What do you want? Is there something you want? And because elementals are elemental, they don't want it. They need it.
Mm-hmm.
If an elemental is like, I need things to burn. Okay, so if I burn a bunch of stuff, will you let me have this thing?
Or I need rock to inhabit, or I need, that's an interesting relationship. All this to tie back to the original idea that everything is connected in some manner. At least that's what we've...
And that might be the point.
Yes.
Yeah, that might be the whole reason for all of this. The reason we have these pantheons. The reason that Joe and I have managed to wring 30 minutes out of this is because, A, we like doing this kind of thing where we jump off on tangents, but because the tangents connect up to other tangents that you don't see until you start talking about them.
And you start going down the rabbit hole because that's what happens with us all the time. But that's why you folks listen, right?
Yeah, the occasional dinosaur fact. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's interesting because, again, there's so much room for a lot of it, and there's so much room for the story to start kind of pieces can start falling into place. Now they can start putting them where they want to go. We've been asking for years for make the Titans make sense. And I'm oversimplifying, and I want to make that perfectly clear. But it's like, make the Titans make sense. Make Azeroth make sense. Make the Legion make sense. Make all of these things that have happened for all throughout the period of Warcraft actually start to make sense. And part of that is because the story has evolved over time. We talked about that at the top of the show. But also part of it is the game, I think, figured out where it was going somewhere around, I want to say Wrath, maybe Pandaria for sure. Like, it figured out where it wanted to go. It figured out what it wanted to do. And now all these disparate threads are starting to be pulled together and woven into one cohesive thing. Like, the going back to the Titan shouldn't be able to go to the Shadowlands. Titan shouldn't be able to die. To they were working with the Legion in so much that they were trying to corrupt it and send their agents everywhere. All these threads from all of history have been pulled together, at least a little bit tighter in the loom, thanks to Shadowlands. And I think it's going to get further refined as we move along. Yeah, it is almost an impossibility to my mind that we won't find out more about, and I hate, like, this is going to sound weird, but more about Ulun in Dragonflight, because there is a connection there. We know there's always been a connection there. There's always been a connection between the Green Dragonflight and Ulun and the elves, and now there's a new tier of Ulun. There's no way that doesn't get brought up at some point, possibly in the empowering of the Dragonflight again, because there's a connection there. And if that's the case, and the Titans and the Titanforge did this originally, now we have further strengthening of that bonds. There's a lot here, right? There's a lot that they can do with this, and I think we haven't seen the end of seeing how these threads all wrap together to make one coherent tapestry. So is there anything else you want to add before we close it out there, Matt?
Yes, but it would take another 40 minutes, so I'm going to just let it go for now.
All right, so I do want to start by saying thank you, Tolkenberg, for sending those over to us. The rest of you that have sent them, we have a lot of questions that we're still going to be getting through. We're going to be doing that for a while. And if you do have questions for this podcast or any of the other podcasts, again, be sure to send them in. Send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com or one of our various channels on our Discord server. And again, Patreon supporters get first dibs. Speaking of Patreon supporters, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Again, folks, thank you very, very much, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
ACAST powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.